Morning, Your Honor. I'm Mark Lenio. I represent Joseph Brownlee. Mr. Brownlee was convicted of one count of a violation of 18 U.S.C. 922G, felon in possession of a firearm. Mr. Brownlee appeals his conviction on two grounds. First, that there was insufficient evidence presented at trial that the gun was transported in, possessed, or affected interstate commerce. The second ground was the district court.
So how do you want the government to prove that it wasn't manufactured in Indiana?
Well, a simple way is to verify where the gun was manufactured, have a representative from the company.
Right, so you want to drag in someone from Smith & Wesson?
Sure. I've had firearms cases where that has happened.
Well, why is this an inferior method? She checks the databases. She calls up the company. Why isn't that as good as dragging the person from Connecticut?
Well, in some circumstances, that can be satisfactory. But if you take a look at what her testimony was a total of 6 pages.
I don't understand 6 pages. All she has to say is she calls up these people, and she calls up Smith & Wesson, and they say some of the plastic, which must be, you know, for the handle, some of the plastic is made in Wisconsin and some other place, and then it's all sent back to Connecticut or Massachusetts or wherever, the northeast, and it's assembled, and then it gets shipped, right?
Well, that,
what's the mystery there?
It's hearsay.
You don't really think this gun was manufactured in Indiana.
I don't.
If you did, you would have looked for some evidence, right? You know it's not manufactured here.
I don't, but the jury doesn't. The jury.
Oh,
doesn't
the
know
jury.
That. The jury. The jury is.
Come on, it's either manufactured here or it isn't.
Right.
That's not a great mystery. These things aren't manufactured in secret underground Smith & Wesson factories.
The government has the obligation to prove each of the elements. One of the elements is that they proved that it moved in interstate commerce. So the question is
and well, they can do that by expert testimony. They don't have to bring in somebody from Smith & Wesson or some other gun manufacturer, can't they? It's done all the time. It's done all the time where interstate nexus is the government puts on an expert who researches a database and has inspected the gun, which happened here.
There wasn't testimony that the gun was inspected. There was no testimony that the gun was inspected. The testimony stated there were some questions about her training. She gave a one or two sentence answer that she said she'd gone to a school.
Okay, did you voir dire her on her qualifications as an expert?
I did not.
Why not? If you don't think she was an expert to be qualified to give that kind of an opinion, why didn't you?
I did challenge the admission of the evidence. We had a sidebar on that.
That's after she's already been qualified as an expert. Correct? Didn't the judge qualify her as an expert?
The court did qualify her as an expert.
And you didn't voir dire her as to her qualifications?
I did not.
See, if she's an expert, she can give hearsay testimony. So she can testify that, you know, the person she spoke to at Smith & Wesson said, no, they don't manufacture guns or gun parts in Indiana. This is where we manufacture them. And she did some other looking around. She had no reason to disbelieve him. He has no interest in this case, obviously. So it seems to me that's adequate for a jury to believe that the gun was not manufactured in Indiana. At that point, it seems to me you better be able to present some contrary evidence.
Well,
On what basis would a rational person disbelieve what she said?
Well, the problem is that she was not relying upon her training as an expert.
She did some other checking besides just calling up the person. She had to know whom to call and, you know, who in the company. Smith & Wesson has many employees. You don't ask one at random. Presumably know someone who's somewhere in the chain of command that would have this kind of information or could get it for her and is reliable. And I don't know what more you want.
Well, the investigation was done one day before the trial. That's when they determined where the place of manufacture, Deep River, Connecticut, was one day before trial.
What difference does that make?
Well, they didn't even have this evidence when they indicted my client.
No, because they know that Smith & Wesson doesn't manufacture guns in Indiana.
Well, a jury doesn't know that, though.
Of course not, and that's why they have to present the evidence before the trial. But they don't have to go looking for the evidence 6 months earlier, because they know it's very easy to obtain with a phone call.
I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Lenio. Mr. Schmidt?
May it please the Court. The interstate nexus proof here was very routine and very standard, and the law is well established. Experts can testify to the very simple element of where the gun was originally made, if it was outside the state where it was possessed. And here, Special Agent Jolly, with 24 years experience in an interstate nexus expert, who's done this routinely and testified in federal court before on interstate nexus, testified quite clearly that the gun was manufactured in Deep River, Connecticut, and it was possessed in Indiana, obviously, therefore it traveled in interstate commerce. I would like to emphasize, with respect to the one objection that the defense did make down below, the hearsay objection, that Special Agent Jolly never actually recounted to the jury the conversation she had with the manufacturer, to confirm only where in one of two places outside of Indiana could have been manufactured. She knew already from her experience in databases that it was manufactured outside of Indiana, but she wanted to know precisely where it was manufactured. That conversation with the gun manufacturer was never articulated in the court. The district court said, no, she can't articulate that conversation, but she can give her opinion. And that's precisely what she did. She said, it's my opinion, based on my analysis, that the gun was manufactured in Connecticut. And that's more than sufficient proof.
I don't understand why she couldn't testify about what the company told her on the phone.
Rule 7.
All she would have to say is, when I do these investigations and my expert, you know, qualifications and methods haven't been challenged, when I do these investigations, part of what I do is call up an employee of the manager. And as long as it's something that she does in the ordinary course of her investigations, she can testify to it.
I agree with you, Your Honor. Under Rule 703, if experts routinely rely on that kind of evidence, then it's the kind of thing that she's entitled to rely on. In this particular case, the district court made a distinction. And there is a case called Luna, which says where there is conversation with a gun manufacturer, the conversation shouldn't come in, but the expert can still give her opinion on it. So in this case, the only objection made below was a hearsay objection. There was no objection to her qualifications, and she was well qualified. There was no plain error on that. She was, as I said, a 24-year special agent, all sorts of interstate nexus experience, access to special ATF databases, and she went the extra step here to confirm where the gun exactly was manufactured. We believe that all the defense challenges are without merit, and we'd ask you to affirm the conviction.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Lenio, do you have anything further?
Nothing further.
Okay, well, thank you. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, sir.
Yes, well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the clients.